Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and at the controls is our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
And if you hear a rubber glove snapping on, that's because our good friend, soon-to-be Dr. Garrett Britton, is back in the studio today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So Bryce Harper was placed on the 15-day disabled list Saturday with bursitis in his knee. He's quoted as saying, his knee is swollen and crappy. Dr. Garrett, what is the cure for a crappy knee?
Yeah, well, that's a tough one. Apparently, he has a knee of a 73-year-old.
That's it.
That's what happens when you run face first into an outfield wall covered with a chain link fence.
That'll do it.
And you know what? This kind of reminds me a little bit. It reminds me of Ken Griffey Jr. a lot, actually. Not just a little bit. Griffey Jr. just running into concrete walls just head on. That's kind of what this Bryce Harper thing reminds me of.
It's too much hard hustle on the body.
Yeah. But did he ever get up with like a circular scar under his entire jawline?
Like, I don't know.
Like he had escaped some medieval torture device.
His knees. Oh, that poor kid. 20. What is he? 20 years old. He's barely 20.
Barely 20.
He's already having knee problems. What is bursitis exactly?
Bursitis. Our major joints have what are called bursa, and they're little fluid-filled sacs that act as lubrication of the joint. And so you get inflammation of this, and it expands in the confined space of a joint. It gets you, it's very painful, makes physical activity very difficult. And really, you do see it in the elderly population a lot.
Oh, Bryce Harper. So sorry to hear that, buddy. Well, I hope he's on the mend. On today's show, we're going to have our medical updates from Dr. Garrett. We're going to talk about what's happening in Pittsburgh and Cleveland, and then we're going to wrap up with a little Soapbox Sunday on Monday.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we still have to go with the Soapbox Sunday because it's alliterative.
But Breaking all the rules.
I had to throw the Monday on there because it's Monday.
My brain's working overtime right now to come up with a different word.
See what you can do, yeah. Maybe our listeners can help us out.
I should have thought of it before we started recording. Maybe no. I would have come up with something then.
I think we do our best work as we're recording. That's when we do our best work.
Well, we'll see about that.
So let's kick this off with Dr. Garrett and his medical updates.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet. All right, we're going to start over at Cleveland with Lou Marson,
who started... Oh, Blue Lou.
Yeah, he started his rehab assignment on May 29th. He's getting back from this shoulder nonsense.
Shoulder hurts. On the DL with right shoulder pain.
So he started his rehab assignment. Things are looking pretty good, and they're expecting an early June return. Where are they?
Well, it is early June, but I think they're working him up slowly, right? They're playing him like, first it was like every other day, and then a couple days in a row with a day off.
Yeah,
they gotta get him back to the tapering rigors of daily catching, shall we say. Yeah, that's something we're going to talk about later, kind of in depth, about how Yan Gomes and Lou Marson, can they both fit onto this team at the same time?
We'll see. And then Brett Myers, who... It's not good. Minor UCL tear. He was reevaluated on Sunday, and
more miles on the comeback trail.
Staff says he's 4 to 5 days away from starting throwing.
Uh huh. Before he shut down again. Once, as I've said before, I expect nothing from a pitcher with elbow soreness until they complete a return to throw program.
That's a good policy.
Because this is, I've just seen it happen so many times where, oh, he's going to make his third rehab. Oh, nope.
Couple days.
Elbow sore. He needs to sit a couple days and start the process all over again.
Just lying to themselves.
And then Chris Perez there.
Speaking of lying to yourself.
This right rotator cuff strain. He's going to sit down from throwing for 3 days. And they did an MRI. It showed tendonitis. There's no tear, so they think we just sit him out.
How does that sound to you, Dr. Britton? Aha! Silence speaks volumes.
It's very difficult on an MRI to see a minor tear if there's a great deal of inflammation. The inflammation kind of swells things, distorts the tissue, so you can't see the normal anatomy there. of all these tendons for the rotator cuff muscles. It is very possible that there's a tear there, and they're just not seeing it. You know, only time will tell.
Now, they're saying it's a different muscle than the one he strained in spring training, right?
Yeah. The one in spring training was a supraspinatus, which is probably the most common rotator cuff muscle that is injured.
But it's all rotator cuff.
But it's, yeah, it's all, there's four muscles there in the group, and it's the most robust compared to the others, you know, and if he's compensating for that injury earlier in spring, putting more strain on these other muscles, you know, we could see problems.
I don't hold out. I'm not sitting around waiting for Chris Perez to come back.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way.
Well, and for the sake of comparison, too, I know the Pirates just made a move with their roster. They placed Phil Irwin on the 60-day, Filthy Phil on Twitter. You can follow him there. They placed him on the 60-day disabled list with elbow tendonitis. So it seems like it can be quite a debilitating condition.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was placed on the 15-day DL on May 26th. We'll see what happens.
I'm not, like I said, I'm not sitting around eagerly anticipating his return.
It's troublesome because this has been an ongoing, you know, we had problems earlier.
And, you know, I don't have a lot of confidence about how Chris Perez moves through a rehab program. Just leave it at that.
Well, and that's a big part of it. Yeah. All right, over to Pittsburgh, where the list is a little bit longer.
Yeah, been a rough stretch for the Buccos
here. Tables are turning here.
Things are shifting.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave when we make fun of Cleveland Indians and their disabled list at the beginning.
Well, I'd like to note, though, that one, at least one of these names is a former Cleveland Indian. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, number one on the list, old Yanmar Gomez.
There's my boy. I told you he let you down.
Poor Yanmar.
Injuries count for letting you down.
I agree. Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So he was taken out of Sunday's game with right forearm tightness.
Tommy John.
He's considered day-to-day, which seems to be the algorithm for the road to Tommy John.
Yeah. You should call Brett Myers for advice. The two of them can talk together.
Chit-chat.
Yanmar, though, I think, you know, he's young enough, probably still have a career, but I'm not sure about Tommy, I'm not sure about Brett Myers' post-Tommy John career perspective.
Well, it's tough. I mean, you never want to jump to something like that, Tommy John, but we've seen it far too often to say it's...
Suddenly erratic from, you know, no control and forearm/elbow tightness. Those are three things that don't sound very good together
bad
if you're
news.
A starting pitcher.
So we'll follow that. John McDonald began his rehab assignment on May 27th with AAA. He was scratched from his last rehab start with low back pain.
Yeah. He seems like a real nice guy.
I just mimed that in the studio for those of you who can't see because we're on podcast.
We're on the airwaves.
Yeah, we're, such as it is, yeah. He's got old man back syndrome. Too many grounders.
Listen, my dad has the same problem when he wakes up in the morning.
He's just not playing shortstop for a major league team. That's
the only difference.
So he started Saturday and looking for a return next couple days. We'll see. He's going to be taking it easy for a while.
Yeah, that's a little R&R. We'll send him out to pasture for a little bit.
I don't think that sounds right.
Good news, Charlie Morton made his final rehab start.
And it went Sunday. Swimmingly.
I don't know if I go that far. It went.
86 pitches got, in four innings?
He got his 80 pitches that they were expecting.
It's just probably not as many innings as they were expecting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard that Clint Hurdle was, you know, begging them to not let him go more than 80 pitches, and the final tally was 86 because they were trying to get him what it was, four innings,
I think it was three or four.
Yeah. So they kind of like, listen, we got to get through a couple innings with him here.
Stretch us out. Now, I don't know about this, I read somewhere about 100 pitch count before starting.
Yes, that's been a Pirates philosophy, along with their, so they have their 30 pitch count with their minor league players, where if you throw over 30 pitches in an inning, they shut you down supposedly after that inning. Now, we've already talked about how they kind of are flexible with that, but their Clint Hurdle has said a couple times now, or I guess I don't know if it's Hurdle or the organization, but they've come out and said, before our players make a start in the major leagues, we want them to be able to make a start with 100 pitches. So that's kind of their goal, I guess, on their rehab.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's what bailed the Indians out on the Brett Myers fiasco this last time, because from what I read, he wanted to come back when he didn't make that third rehab start. He was all like, I'm ready, because he'd thrown like an 80 pitch outing.
Right.
And Francona and Antonetti were like, no, we've got five guys who are pitching pretty well right now. So when you come back, you need to be able to throw 115 pitches, because we got five guys stretched out to 115 pitches right now. And he never made that start. Didn't even make one pitch that day. So that saved them from that roster move.
For the time being.
Then Jeff Karstens.
Oh, poor Jeff.
Moved to the 60-day DL. He was reevaluated by physicians.
Backdated to April 1st.
Yeah. So he was having this pain in the right shoulder, forced him to stop throwing. And he was on the DL earlier for this right shoulder inflammation. It's tough to say what's going on with him.
You know, that's kind of what, you know, same boat as Chris Perez.
Yeah.
All of a sudden your shoulder inflammation turns. It's like, oh, well, now, 60-day DL. He's eating sunflower seeds.
Yep, that's what we're paying him to eat a lot of sunflower seeds.
Keeping with the 60-day DL, Phil Irwin.
Yep, just there recalled.
Phil.
Filthy Phil.
Phil.
Now, won't be answering the call anytime soon.
I don't know too much. I don't know too much about his history. He's never gone under the knife, has he?
I don't believe so. I didn't see anything about it, in anything that I read about him having anything previous with his arm.
So he was diagnosed with ulnar nerve inflammation, which
I don't like the sound of that.
Which is unusual. In Tommy John surgery, the ulnar nerve is actually moved. It's rerouted. And so I could foresee, you know, problems with that after Tommy John surgery. But to see it, you know, on a naive shoulder or elbow, that's kind of strange. So we'll have to follow that.
Maybe we'll dig a little deeper, see if we...
I thought there was an Indians pitcher that once had that. Anthony Reyes, do you remember him?
Mm-mm.
Flash in the pan. He had like five good starts.
Yeah.
Came out of nowhere. Ulnar nerve inflammation.
Hmm.
Haven't heard from him since.
Don't like the sounds of that. Because I'm a big filthy Phil
fan.
And
I think Anthony Reyes eventually had Tommy John.
Did he?
I'd have to look back through my memory, but...
So we're going to keep a close eye on Philip Irwin
as well.
Yeah,
we'll watch that. That's interesting. James McDonald, 15-day DL for shoulder inflammation back in May. During rehab, he had these problems with blisters. He had to keep sitting out. He was able to make his second rehab start on Saturday in Altoona. Seems like he's back on track.
So let me ask you this, Andy. You need a pitcher for this Saturday. The Pirates have said they're going to go with Charlie Morton. Would you rather go with Charlie Morton or McDonald?
At this point, I'd probably rather go with Morton because you know what he is. You know, he's a sinker ball pitcher. You know, he throws that heavy sinker, and he just doesn't look like a mess when he goes out there. Like, the last couple James McDonald starts, he looked like a mess. He didn't look like a major league pitcher. He looked like a kid trying to figure it out. So I think at this point I'd rather see, can Morton fill in and be that guy instead of getting what James McDonald was before we had to put him on the shelf. So I would rather go with Morton personally.
There you go.
Jose Tabata with this left strained oblique. He was cleared for physical activity, placed on 15-day DL, returned mid-June. Shouldn't be, you know, this is pretty standard. I don't expect anything significant with him. Chase D, recovering from thumb surgery, was bumped up from double to triple A.
Yep.
So that's a good sign.
Yeah.
And Jose Contreras.
Oh, speaking of old man disease.
42-year-old reliever.
Jeez.
Low back inflammation lands him 15-day DL, scheduled to throw bullpen Monday, today.
Okay, all right. So I don't know.
Same thing. What?
Contreras, honestly, I feel like he's a guy that kind of clogs up our bullpen.
Is it significant? Right.
He's not a guy that... I would rather have a guy like Brian Morris in our bullpen than Jose Contreras to begin with, because Brian Morris has some upside. You know, I'd rather stick one of those young guys. Like, give Vic Black a shot. That guy throws a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Give him a shot. Jose Contreras, I don't know what you're expecting to get from him when you sign a 42-year-old relief pitcher other than a bunch of DL stints to begin with. So that's my scathing review of Jose Contreras. Sorry, Jose. You seem like a really nice guy.
I was reading old articles about Anthony Reyes' ulnar nerve inflammation, but it sounded horrible. It sounded very, very mean-spirited.
I don't have anything personally against the guy, just as a baseball player. So is that it out of Pittsburgh? Anything?
That is it. Is all that right. enough?
So we survived, but barely. Jeez, that was a tough one to stomach there after the last...
When you're sitting at home tonight with nothing to do, type in Anthony Reyes ulnar nerve inflammation.
I'll Google that once.
About Lewis Yoakam doing the surgery, which unfortunately Dr. Yoakam passed away.
Yeah, I saw
last
that
last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
but it was unclear. I didn't get far enough to figure out what happened after the surgery, what the conclusion was, but it seemed at the time it was unclear if the need for Tommy John caused the nerve inflammation, or if the nerve inflammation led to the need for Tommy John.
One of those things.
But when he visited Dr. Yoakam, he said, "Well, you know, if we're going to be in there, we might as well tighten up that ligament for you."
While we're rooting around in there. All right, well, let's move on to the Pittsburgh Pirates and what's going on in Pittsburgh. If you've been paying attention to the Pirates at all, you've seen they've made a flurry of roster moves over the last couple days. It's actually in my notes, so, you know, I'll kind of take notes as the week progresses. And my notes started out when Josh Harrison was optioned and Alex Presley was recalled. And then today, Alex Presley was optioned and
I was watching a Pirates game yesterday. I was like, oh, Alex Presley's called up. And then I look at your notes today and Alex Presley's optioned out today.
Alex Presley demoted.
That was a short stay.
The roster moves, there have been quite a few of them. So, The Pirates, after they optioned Josh Harrison, recalled Alex Presley. He hit leadoff for us the other day, actually. And he's actually been doing a better job as far as they asked him this season to start taking some more walks, be more patient, be a more selective hitter, kind of changing his approach because Pittsburgh had nobody that can do that at the top of their lineup. And so he felt like that was one of the things he really did. And at the beginning of the season when he was optioned down, he was kind of upset and he said, listen, he came out to the media and said, I've been working on these things. I'm kind of disappointed that I'm being sent down because I worked really hard with what they asked me to. So I don't know. I mean, anytime a player has options, obviously,
right.
You know, it's detrimental to their major league progress.
Remaining on the roster.
It gives them that flexibility to ship them out.
And especially when you need bullpen arms because of what you're going to get to, those are the guys who are the easy targets.
And that's exactly what Pittsburgh did because they've been taxing their bullpen. Today, Ryan Reed and Jared Hughes were called up from AAA Indianapolis. Now, you know, these additions to their bullpen are going to try and give a little bit of relief because their bullpen's been so taxed, not just over these last couple series, but basically the whole season.
Yeah. Not only, I mean, like, Gomez, the 10 innings they needed to get over Gomez's injury is the most recent example, but it's been a recurring
theme
all season long.
You think about Jonathan Sanchez going out there when Gomez was coming in to relieve his starts, right. And then, you know, you get these guys that go out there, have these short outings, James McDonald's outings, where all of a sudden, you know, 3-4 innings instead of the 5 or 6 that you hope to get from a starting pitcher. And, you know, it's taxing our bullpen. Our bullpen's responding tremendously. But because of that, I think you're starting to see a
shuffle.
Yeah, we have to start getting some fresh arms to give these guys a break. You know, Jason Greeley already has 22 saves or something like that.
Which is unreal. You're at like the third mark.
Yeah,
you know, third of the way through the season, he's got 22 saves.
I mean, he's just shutting it down. So
now, did they option down old Big Z there, Big Zagurski?
Mike Zagurski is still on the roster. Yeah, they haven't optioned him down. And
saving that one for tomorrow, I guess.
He was cannon fodder If you watch the Cincinnati Reds series, he was cannon fodder for the Cincinnati Reds. They brought him into the game, and you could tell he just didn't have it. He was just leaving balls like everywhere, and he ended up coming in and throwing 50 pitches, you know, 50 plus pitches over 1 2/3 innings.
Yikes.
He just got destroyed. And you know, other than that though, I mean, our bullpen's been spotless for the most part this season. I mean, when they've given up runs, it hasn't been in bunches like with Zagurski's last outing. But he was not a shining star for his little moment of glory out there against Cincinnati. But no. You know, Brian Morris, he pitched in two of the three games against the Reds. Justin Wilson pitched an inning Saturday, and then he came out again and pitched two innings on Sunday. Vin Mazzaro threw a 15-pitch inning on Saturday, and then he threw three innings again on Sunday. All of a sudden, they had to do something because they need to give these guys a break. So these are some of the moves that they made. That's why you're going to see guys like Ryan Reed, who's having an awesome season at AAA. He has an ERA of like 0.5, you know, 31 strikeouts across 34 innings. And if Jared Hughes has that sinker ball working, we saw what he could do last year. So hopefully this ends up being one of those positive things for the Pirates instead of a negative. Pedro Alvarez had his wisdom teeth removed.
Oof.
And he was scratched from a couple starts there. So he was back in action though, and everything seems to be all right with him. And Clint Hurdle. So this was after the Cincinnati game. And this was one of the things that I thought was pretty interesting. So after the 6-0 one hit loss to Cincinnati in Johnny Cueto's start, he was asked about all the shutouts and one run games, and Hurdle said that you always want to have more offense, but that there's more offense in their lineup than Pittsburgh is showing right now.
Sure.
So basically what he's saying is, yeah, this is all happening to us, but you're going to look for us at some point to start scoring runs in bunches again. And you know, he's got that confidence there. It was nice to hear that as a Pirates fan, because we're watching all these games and they're 1-0 and 2-1 and 3-2. And it's bad for my blood pressure. It really is to see all these, like I'm watching games and I'm like, oh, my left arm's going numb. Somebody score some runs, please. And you know that there's offense there. You know, we have Walker up towards the top of the lineup, and Marte, who's been having a great season, and Andrew McCutchen, who's one of the most dynamic players in baseball, and they're just not scoring runs, and it gets really frustrating to watch. But you know, I guess you just kind of hope that you trod through it, and if your pitching can keep you in games and series like Pittsburgh has been, you're just kind of hoping that it gives the offense enough time to recoup. So we already talked about Genmar Gomez. You know, he was placed on the DL, which that's kind of rough on our pitching, because he was one of those guys that we really started to count on. One of the pluses about this is that at least we have, you know, a Charlie Morton coming back to our rotation. That kind of gives us it's not as big of a blow, I guess, because we're not having to plug in somebody from AAA who's just a warm body.
But he was doing a lot to help stabilize.
He really was. He had, you know, an ERA of 2.5, a sub-1 whip. You know, he was just eating innings for Pittsburgh, and again, he's bridging that. He's shortening a game, helping to bridge that gap to the phenomenal bullpen.
The Shark Tank.
So, you know, to lose that, it's a tough blow. But I guess we'll kind of see over the next couple days what's going to happen with our rotation and how things are going to shake down. Starling Marte was hit twice in the final game of the Cincinnati series, and if you follow the Pirates at all, this is not an uncommon theme when Cincinnati plays Pittsburgh over the last couple seasons. You know, I really started to notice it last year when Aroldis Chapman threw a 100-mile-an-hour fastball at Andrew McCutchen's head. And
he had the habit of doing that. He did that Nick Swisher a week ago.
I took it a bit personally, I'm not going to lie.
So did Swisher.
So you know, and last year when this beanball war started between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, Cincinnati got their lick in on Pittsburgh when they plunked Andrew McCutchen, you know, right in the shoulder blades. With 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and all of a sudden benches are warned, and they're warned the next day before the game even starts. So Pittsburgh has no chance of retaliation. So these beanball wars continuing right on this weekend. I think there were like 5 or 6 guys that were plunked this weekend in this 3-game series. These aren't accidents.
So, as opposed to what happened in the Indian series, where no warnings were issued, and the next day, McAllister drilled Brandon Phillips in the ribs, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, that's it. It's just over. I like how Brandon Phillips, by the way, is a scapegoat for the Cincinnati Reds, because he just runs his mouth off and then wears it.
And he's always going to be a scapegoat when he plays the Indians, because
he used to be.
He totally wore out his welcome there. Yeah. So, the way he reacted after Zach McAllister hit him was priceless. He just turned and looked real slow, walked over, picked up the ball, handed it to the catcher. It was like all just like, I'm not going to say anything, but man. It was like he was like, it's almost in a way saying like, come on, Chapman. Come on.
Yeah.
Quit hitting people, because then I get hit.
He's the one.
I'm tired of getting drilled in the ribs.
There's a lot of teams around the league aren't big fans of Brandon Phillips.
Yeah.
You could put a lot of teams.
That's what happens when you put the franchise on the back of your spikes. I'm not kidding either.
You might as well put a target on your back. That's what you're doing. But so Starling Marte was hit twice in the last game of the Cincinnati series. Warnings were issued to each bench. But I don't understand, what is the point of a warning if you're going to warn the benches and then Starling Marte gets hit and nothing happens?
Yeah.
And I get that it might not be an accident, but this is twice this year where an umpire has issued a warning in a Pirates game and then our players have gotten hit after the warning and nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if it was against Cincinnati the last time or not when this happened, but we actually, after a warning, it was that Jonathan Sanchez start. That was St. Louis. But well, there were two of our batters that were plunked in that game after a warning, and nothing happened.
Let me explain something to you. First of all, I don't know about St. Louis. I assume they have the same benefits given to them. I learned a very interesting fact about the Cincinnati Reds last week when the Indians played them. They played them two games, like a Monday, Tuesday, you know, and then two games in Cleveland on Wednesday, Thursday, or whatever the case was. That night game that the Reds played in Cincinnati and then had to fly to Cleveland that night, which we all admit is not a long trip, that was the first time they'd played a night game on a getaway day in 13 years. Hmm. I'm just going to let that sink in.
Wow.
Now, how is that fair?
That's
every player in the league would love to play a day game on a getaway day.
Right.
They would all much prefer that than to show up at the hotel at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And so the time it happens for the Reds is when they fly from Cincinnati to Cleveland.
Convenient.
They're probably there at midnight.
Yeah. Wow.
That came right from Tom Hamilton in the radio broadcast. So I'm going to assume it's true.
Yeah. Hmm. That's interesting.
I think it's 13 years. It was way too long. I mean, 1 year
is
too long.
Too long.
And it was over a decade.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Cincinnati plays by a different set of rules.
Apparently. Obviously. Yeah.
I mean, but seriously, how many games does that amount to? How many wins does that amount to over the course of a year?
Oh, geez. That's a very good question.
That'd be a good question for Ben Jedlovic.
Yeah, we need to get Ben Jedlovic
on the horn
that. We need to talk to him about those sabermetrics. So other than the Beanball War, just a couple other things to touch on. In that win on Sunday, Garrett Jones hit a monster shot. If you didn't see it, he just mule hacked a ball into the river. It was the second splashdown.
Second splashdown ever.
The first I remember Daryl Ward, who actually ended up becoming a Pirate. I think it was after that. Or maybe he was a Pirate.
Well, I thought
that.
He was before
it
that.
It might have been before that. But he was with the Astros at the time. Yeah. He just beat the bejesus out of a ball too. But Garrett Jones said after the game, he's like, I was swinging angry. He said, I haven't been getting a lot of hits and stuff, and I just went up there and swung as hard as I could. He's like, if I made contact, I'd hit it far, but didn't expect to hit it that far. It was like 400, I think,
67
or 63. So, yeah, he right over a biker's head on the little walkway down there.
That guy was in the water for a good 20 minutes. He couldn't find the ball.
Yeah.
They're showing it on TV.
I don't know what happened to it.
I don't know why he lost that.
And baseball's float.
Well, they discussed that on the Root Sports broadcast. They float for a while.
Well, yeah. Until
he didn't find it quickly enough. Apparently. I'm going to guess it really,
probably
torpedoed down. Maybe he got stuck in the mud down there if he hit it hard enough. I don't know how deep that water is. Right by the, because it was like, wasn't that far into the water.
I mean, he was standing up when he was looking. Yeah. But there was, the ball was floating. You could see it on the top.
Oh, it was floating for a while?
Yeah. So I don't know.
He was probably drinking.
Probably Beck. The icy light might have something to
Pittsburgh.
Do with that.
The Iron City.
So, real quick with the minors, Tony Sanchez, our hopefully future franchise catcher, and just fingers crossed, first round draft pick. He had an incredible month of May for the Indians. He hit 369, 442, 706, his triple slash line, and 65 at bats. 10 doubles, 4 homers. On the season, he's hitting 305, 401, 555 for his triple slash, 14 doubles, 6 home runs. So he's having a solid year. You know, he hasn't turned into that impact immediate player that you expect when you draft a, you know, player in the first round, but it's looking like his hitting's coming around, and his defense has really never been that much in question. So hopefully he'll end up being a contributor.
Hopefully he contributes enough to justify those pants
yeah.
he wears in that Twitter photo.
Those beautiful salmon-colored pants. It takes a real man to wear salmon. It really does.
Keep telling yourself that, Tony.
I respect that, Tony. Don't let this naysayer talk you out of those pants. Garrett Cole threw 7 innings the other day. It was his first super solid start in a while.
Andy's blood pressure returned to normal shortly thereafter.
It was good. Yeah, I could go back to normal levels. Across his 7 innings, he gave up 2 hits and a walk, struck out 5 against Columbus. He had a couple really good at-bats against, you know, some major league caliber hitters. Your boy Ezekiel Carrera was down there. And
Can I express my distaste for the fact that the Pirates AAA team is named the Indians?
Hey, you guys could name your AAA team the Pirates.
Why would we, though?
No one would take offense.
You should take offense.
I'd be fine with it. You call yourself the Pirates. There were years where I think we were a AAA team, so
I wouldn't. That is a whole other ball.
I know, the Pirates moved to Columbus? The Columbus Pirates? Yeah, all right. Then the last thing, I'm sure you'll be very excited to hear this. Stetson Alley has 7 home runs across his last 14 games on a 6-game hitting streak.
Yeah, well.
Playing strong down there.
How old is he?
21.
And he's in
21, 22.
Low A?
Low A. He was also a pitcher. No, yeah, 21, 22. Yeah.
Okay.
We drafted him right out of high school. So that's it for the Pirates. Jason, let's move on to the Tribe, see what's going on over in Tribe Town.
Well, I kind of want to hit on each part of the Cleveland machine, such as it is. First, I don't want to spend too much time on the offense. There's a lot of negative naysayers about this offense. I just kind of feel like I said from the beginning that it's going to be a very streaky team. They can hit. They will hit. There's going to be games where they're not going to hit at all. There's going to be games where they score 15, 19 runs. They're streaky, and it's going to make for some duds of games when they go out, you know, you pay your ticket price and they get 2 hits together. But it's also going to make for a lot of really exciting games or even innings, because they're never really out of it.
Right.
You know, they looked really bad the other day against Jeremy Hellickson for like 4 innings, and then boom, 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 they scored 3 runs with 2 outs. That's what they're capable of doing. For them, more and more, it's all about pitching. You know, people are getting all upset about Drew Stubbs because he's batting ninth and hitting like 230. Last year, a third of our order was hitting 230. Yeah. And they couldn't play defense or steal bases either, both of which Drew Stubbs is fully capable of doing.
Oh, I went to the series finale for the Rays and
no,
Indians.
You went to the Saturday game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, it was a Saturday game. Yeah, I went to the Saturday game. And Drew Stubbs had a phenomenal catch in, I think he was right that game. And then, you know, Friday night watching him, he made a huge catch up against the wall.
Oh, yeah.
That was Friday, wasn't it?
I think so.
Where he made that diving or that diving catch up against the wall.
I don't have any problem with Drew Stubbs playing every day. I really don't. He's batting ninth. He's playing really great defense. And there's times where when he does get on, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd love to see him bat 300. That's never going to happen. But when he does get on, and that makes for a really interesting situation with Drew Stubbs on first and Michael Bourne at bat, because you can do a lot of things right there. You can let him steal and then bunt him over. I mean, you could hit and run.
Yeah.
If you hit and run and Michael Bourne hits the ball in the outfield, he's going to score.
Right.
I mean, that's all there is to it. And then Michael Bourne's on steal second. Now you got a runner in scoring position. That's what the offense is capable of doing when they actually get on base. And some people I've heard are kind of trashing Nick Swisher because he's only got 20 RBIs. Let's not forget he's had Jason Kipnis and Cabrera batting in front of him most of the year, who have really not done a good job getting on base for at least the first 2 months.
Right.
I mean,
Kipnis has been playing, you know, phenomenal the last couple weeks.
Yeah, he's been playing well lately. But when you're batting fourth and pretty much every time you're either leading off an inning or batting with one guy on base, you know, that's not going to get you very many RBIs. Like I said, though, for this team, it's all about the pitching. The rotation is looking heck of a lot better than anyone thought it was going to. So we have to give some credit to Mickey Callaway. Obviously, it's still early. We're only a third of the way through the season. But, you know, Masterson, McAllister are still looking good, holding down the front of the rotation. It'll be interesting. Masterson's pitching on primetime ESPN game tonight against the Yankees. So that'll be an interesting one to see how he handles that. There's lots of skepticism about Scott Kazmir before his last start. And some of it is due to the bullpen, which we'll get to. But he went out and put up a great start. I think he went 7 innings and 1 run. He gave up 8 hits. But, I mean, when you're talking your fourth or fifth starter, pitching out of trouble and getting in and out of jams is part of the name of the game. He's had some bad starts, I'm not going to lie. But he's doing all right. And Corey Kluber, now here's a guy. I'm going to read off his last couple starts for you. He only went 2 innings because the rain-shortened game that lasted till 3 in the morning or 5 in the morning the other day. But he hadn't given up a hit yet in that game. Then 6 2/3 with 3 hits and 1 run. 6 1/3, 8 hits and 3 runs. 6 innings, 6 hits and 3 runs. Then his blow-up against Detroit when we were recording that game, Ember, and I said, Corey Kluber's all right. And you're like, I guess you're not watching this game. 5 2/3 and 3 runs. 7 innings, 7 hits and 2 runs. Point being, we're talking about your fifth starter.
Right.
And really, your eighth starter. Because most people going into the year would say, if Corey Kluber's up, that means Carrasco's flamed out, Bauer's flamed out, and somebody in the regular rotation is flamed out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting if Brett Myers ever returns. Because I more and more don't see how you can plug Brett Myers in after all the subpar performances he's had since spring training and tell Corey Kluber, hey, thanks for way overachieving, but we'll catch you next time. You know, I don't know how you do that, but anyways, that's my feeling on Corey Kluber. But Ubaldo is, of course, the big story. Andy, you saw his start Saturday against the Rays when he went 8 innings and didn't allow a run. More and more, you're starting to believe in some form of consistency because I'm always skeptical every time he goes out. Like we talked about last week, you're just waiting for the wheels to fall off. But more and more, what I see is he gets into jams and then gets out of them. And that is what he could never do. Whenever he got runners on base, his mechanics went totally out of whack. His confidence just completely deserted him, and all of a sudden you've got, 7 runs in 1 inning, and you're calling on the bullpen.
I mean, if you're looking at Ubaldo over his last couple starts, he had the 6 earned run hiccup against Detroit, which
right.
It's not shocking that a pitcher struggles against Detroit,
right, exactly.
Regardless of who it is. And other than that, you really have to go back to his
total implosion.
April 21st start against Houston, where he only lasted 5 innings and gave up 4 earned runs.
Okay.
Before that, you know, the 7 earned runs
against
Boston. That was
the big implosion was against Boston,
yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I was talking to Bob, of course, who, you know, used to be our podcast mate here, about Ubaldo, and I was saying I actually saw him. He wasn't pitching that day. Ubaldo was in the dugout. Somebody just hit a home run or something. He's wearing wraparound sunglasses, and somebody came in the dugout. He gave a big high five, and he was smiling, sitting there eating sunflower seeds. I said, I don't know if I've ever seen Ubaldo smile. And it's like he's becoming a lot more confident in himself. You know, you actually see him on the mound not totally look lost. I mean, there were times where just from the moment Santana threw him the ball before the first pitch, you're like, oh boy, here we go.
It's going to be one of those.
Because you could just tell his body language was like, I don't have it. I'm not here. I can't do this. I think he's actually, what it is, it's the confidence, and he's actually figuring out how to pitch with lower velocity.
Which, that's been the biggest drastic difference between the Ubaldo Jimenez, who was a potential Cy Young winner in Colorado just lighting the world on fire, and the Ubaldo Jimenez who's pitching for Cleveland now is about 7-8 miles an hour difference on his fastball.
Right. And I think that was the problem. When he'd get into a jam and his mechanics would completely go out of whack, it was because all he'd ever done in his life to get out of a jam was rear back and blow it by someone.
Just throw it harder.
And so he'd rear back, completely mess up his mechanics, and groove one right down the middle of the plate, or not be able to find the plate at all. I mean, those were his two common outcomes to all those situations. So if you watch him, he's actually using deception, you know, and his pitches are actually deceiving people. Not the speed of them, but the location and the selection of them. But the big problem the team has right now, hands down, is relief pitching. The right-handed relievers, we talked a lot about them last week. They've held it together pretty well. Vinny Pastano, every time he comes out, looks more and more like Vinny Pastano. That first appearance after we talked last week, he literally gave up a home run either to the first or second batter he faced. And then it was almost like, okay, well, whatever. And Vinny Pastano after the game said, I got mad. I don't know if that was it or what, but all of a sudden he was throwing 92, 93, locating his fastball. He literally got better every pitch. If you were watching that appearance, you could see him return more and more to Vinny. But left-handed, oh my goodness gracious.
So let me ask you this. Is there anything that Cleveland has in-house, any options in-house that Cleveland can use to improve their effectiveness there?
There are literally no left-handed relief options major league ready. There's no one in the minors. Because, see, this is what we have to think about. Rich Hill was their signing. He has been completely ineffective and has just blown up the last couple times he's come out. Nick Hagedone was their hope for a second lefty. He's had flashes of, you know, just devastating slider and mid-90s fastball, but then just completely goes off the rails, can't find the plate. So then it was, if you're thinking in their minds before the season, okay, well then if those two guys flame out, we'll go Scott Barnes. Well, Scott Barnes got optioned down last week because he completely blew up against the, it's escaping me, it was before the Rays series, must have been Cincinnati. The fourth option was Giovanni Soto, but he's been out most of the year struggling with a lower back injury. So there's your four. I mean, it's not like they didn't have any options going into the year. It's just they've pretty much exhausted three of them, and the fourth guy's hurt. It's funny that you use the phrase, is there anyone in-house? Because they have a left-handed starter in Columbus, TJ House, who's looked very good after being promoted to Columbus. And there's, you know, some talk about, well, maybe we need to turn TJ House into a reliever. Seems like they don't want to do that. Like, they don't want to, A, take this guy who's performing well as a left-handed starter, which the Indians have almost none of those in the upper levels, and give him his first taste of the majors out of a role he's never done.
Right.
That's why I mentioned about Kazmir earlier. As good as Kazmir has pitched, if you watch his starts, he struggles second, third time through the lineup because he's still learning, I think, how to do what Ubaldo looks to finally figure it out. Scott Kazmir doesn't have the velocity he used to have, and he's learning to be a different pitcher. He's only got so many tricks up his sleeve right now. Second or third time, it doesn't look so good. He's also, I'm assuming, going to be on an innings limit. So there's kind of this movement of, well, you know, if Myers comes back, or maybe Carrasco's been pitching so well, we just need to work around that suspension, put Scott Kazmir in the bullpen, and bring Bauer or Carrasco or someone up. I don't think they're at that point yet, mainly because Scott Kazmir went out and had a really good outing. I think if he had gone out and gone through the lineup one time quick and then got shelled, like, let's talk about that option again. They're probably going to ride that Scott Kazmir starting for a little while to see if he can hold down that role before they really talk about making him a reliever.
Right. This will make for a good point when we get to our soapbox, too. I think that'll be interesting to see. So do you think, is it better to have 7 or 8 really good right-handed relievers with no lefties, or 5 to 6 extremely good righties with...
Well, that's the question, because right now Rich Hill has one of the worst batting averages of any of the relievers on the team against lefties. So it's like, well, why even put Rich Hill in the game? You know, at least Hagedorn, I think, is like in the 240s range. You know, Cody Allen has a better mark against lefties than Rich Hill does. So there's a lot of people saying, why don't you put Cody Allen in? I'm a little sympathetic to that just because I've seen, you know, again, the key for this team is just to keep the game close because this offense could put up 3-4 runs at any moment.
Right.
And I've seen a couple games in this last stretch just get away from them because it was like, well, it's a tough lefty, so let's put Hagedorn in. Boom. Gives up 3-4 runs. Well, it's a tough lefty, let's put Rich Hill in. Boom. 5 runs. Now you're getting killed. You know, it just destroys all the momentum. I think you want to at least have one. And if I was the Indians, that guy's got to be Hagedorn because I've at least seen some flashes
right.
from him that he can do it. Rich Hill, I think, is kind of running out of rope. You
Rich
know?
Hill is human again.
Yeah, he's human again. And so I don't know if Scott Kazmir takes one of those spots or not. But the last thing I want to talk about is Yan Gomes. Dr. Garrett brought that up earlier. His catching has been perfectly adequate,
really,
if not
really good.
Really good.
Yeah.
There was he airmailed a throw to third base yesterday that was at a crucial moment where they just came back and brought it to within one run against the Rays. He airmailed a throw, they scored another run. That was kind of a momentum killer at the time, but you don't see him do that very often. I don't see how Lou Marson returns to this team to hit 220 and play defense that hasn't been better than what Yan Gomes is playing since like maybe 2 years ago.
And Yan Gomes, he provides a solid bat for
right.
How frequently he's playing.
I think the only problem, I think they would love to play Yan Gomes all the time. Let him DH, you know, whatever. They've been burned 4 times this year already when they DH one of their catchers and the other catcher's gotten hurt.
Yeah.
And most people will be like, that never happens. Well, no, it usually doesn't happen, but they've got nailed 4 times already.
Carlos Santana takes more hard foul balls off himself. I don't know if it's maybe positioning himself right or if maybe the baseball gods are just like, we don't like you.
Yeah, that's always a big debate, you know, because a lot of people get on Santana for his defense. And is it he's not positioning correctly because he wasn't brought up as a catcher originally, you know, or what? But he's always getting banged up. The thing that I'm just super curious about, we heard all this talk about how Yan Gomes can play the corners. Then let Mark Reynolds DH and let Yan Gomes play third.
Get Mark Reynolds' defense.
He cannot
off third.
Be any worse at third base than Mark Reynolds. I watched Mark Reynolds from the third base seats about 5 rows up directly with third base 2 years ago when he was with the Orioles with Bob. It was a nightmare. It was like I was out there playing third base in a Major League Baseball game. Balls were bouncing off his chest. He's diving from there, hitting off his arm. I mean, oh, it was bad. I can't. Mark Reynolds was hitting much better when he wasn't having to worry about playing third base.
Right, yeah.
When he just played first every once in a while. And he's an okay first baseman. He'll
survive.
He'll survive there. Not nearly as good as Swisher, who's a very good first baseman defensively. But I don't understand, you know, we heard all about this. Let's see it. I want to see Yan Gomes play third because I can't imagine it's worse than Mark Reynolds.
It's hard to imagine.
So to finish the thing with Lou Marson, he has options, but he hasn't been sent back to the minors in 3 years. So a little trick of the collective bargaining agreement comes in where if you haven't been optioned back in 3 years, but you still have options remaining, you have to go on optional waivers to be sent back. But apparently it's revocable. So the Indians could put him on waivers, and if someone claims him, pull him back and figure something else out. I don't think anyone's going to claim him. With his injury history this year and his struggles batting and playing defense, I can't see anyone claiming him unless like someone has 2 catchers go down on the same day, the day they put him on waivers,
right.
You know. That's what I think is going to happen. Because they're not going to get rid of Jason Giambi.
Right.
He's playing very well for what they're asking from him. And they're not going to – Vilas is playing great, and they're not going to give up on Rayburn because
– the beginning of the season.
The beginning of the season, and he provides them a lot of flexibility to carry Jason Giambi.
Right.
Without Rayburn, you can't carry Giambi.
Ryan Rayburn's going to live off those first 2 weeks for the next 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the updates from Cleveland there, Jason. Real quick, before we get on our soapbox, we want to give a little shout-out to the Seawolves. They start a series with the Portland Sea Dogs tomorrow at Jerry Yutt. Following that, this weekend, they are playing the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. Against the Akron Arrows on Monday, the 27th of May, Tyler Collins hit a walk-off in the 10th inning. Tyler Collins.
And I almost went to that game.
He's been swinging a good bat. That'd have been a good one to go to.
I know. I was so close. Almost made it.
That would have been a phenomenal one to go to. We're going to be going to catch the Seawolves one of these days this week, my girlfriend and myself. So we'll be giving you some updates from the stadium, I'm sure, tweeting out everything. Hopefully it's a day when Warwick Saupold's throwing, because our Australian friends seem to love when we're tweeting out Aussie stuff. So, and then on the 28th, actually, the next day, Kyle Lobstein tossed his second complete game of the season, but he lost. Unfortunately, with a great pitching performance, he ended up taking the loss. He allowed three earned runs, four total runs on six hits with a walk. He had eight strikeouts, but you know, he ended up getting tagged with that. Sometimes, often unfair loss. Just no offense from the Wolves that night. So, Lobstein's having another great season for the Wolves as well. So, just a couple more guys to keep an eye on, along with my boy James McCann, who's just raking for the Wolves this year. So.
It's a howl of good time.
It is a howl of a good time. Well, let's hop up on our soapbox real quick before we wrap this up. J.R. House.
Oh, boy.
Let's take all that disgust and despair and pay it off.
Just, yeah, step off.
Ooh.
Kind of a grit guy myself. Mm.
Keep talking there, Andy.
You know what? I'm not going to formally apologize to Al.
Drink a pint of maple syrup and raise the Jolly Roger.
Sal Fasano. So today, one of the things I want to talk about while we're on our soapbox is what
I'm looking up at you right now.
What seems to be the emergence of the long relief man. Now, it hasn't come back as one of those things where they've actually like designated a guy in the bullpen the long relief guy, like kind of like with the closer. You know, there's like everybody's got the closer.
Who will be the Dennis Eckersley of long relief? That's the question.
Well. And with the Pirates, especially early on the season, I started to notice that's what Genmar Gomez's role was at the beginning of the season. That's how he ended up in that starting spot, was he came in as a long relief guy. Like when Jonathan Sanchez...
Swingman.
Yeah, when Jonathan Sanchez would blow up and record zero outs in a start, all of a sudden we'd bring in Genmar Gomez to throw four or five innings to take some of that pressure off the other guys. Along with the Pirates in their bullpen as well, Justin Wilson's been a guy. He's recorded five wins on the season because he's been pitching at the end of these really close games where he's getting multiple innings at the end. You know, he's throwing two, three innings at the end of these games. And it seems like there's more of a shift to getting... And Justin Wilson was a starter in the minors who came up, so he has an idea of what it takes to stretch his arm out a little bit. You know, Genmar Gomez was a starter in Cleveland for all those seasons, so he knows what it takes to stretch his arm out. And it seems like it almost makes more sense for teams to have a pitcher like a Justin Wilson or a Genmar Gomez on their roster, so that if they have one of those starts that blows up, instead of having to go inning by inning by inning, and then eventually at the end, Chris Davis is pitching for your team because you have nobody left in the bullpen.
In the 10th inning, when you really need somebody to not give up a run.
I mean, you've got Justin Wilson, a stopper, really, at the end of that bullpen, pumping 98 miles an hour for two or three innings when you need it. And I don't know if Cleveland has anybody in their bullpen like that, but it seems like in our conversation from earlier that Scott Kazmir could be one of those guys who he's great through the lineup once or twice so
far.
Sure.
They don't really. I think they've gone with the eight-man bullpen for a lot of the year, which I think has afforded them not the guy who can go multiple innings maybe, but you've always got a couple guys out there who haven't pitched in a couple days.
Yeah, so they can go consecutive.
If you need them to go two innings today, they can, because they didn't work yesterday and they didn't work the day before. That seems to be their route. I think they had dreams kind of using Scott Barnes and or David Huff in that role. Like, oh, you know, these guys aren't going to be shut down lefties that we want to put in against Joey Votto in the eighth inning. But they can give us some help, and they can go pitch three or four innings if we need them to. I think Scott Barnes might have even got a three-inning save, the old three-inning save
rule.
Yeah,
yep.
But no, right now they don't. And I think if you have a suspect rotation, I think it is a really good idea to have at least one guy in that bullpen who, you know, maybe he just needs to go out there and take his licks, but it's going to save your bullpen for tomorrow and the next day. I mean, we've all seen our teams send their starter out in the first game of a big series. The guy gets lit up, or maybe he gets hurt, like Genmar got hurt. You got to go pitch 8 innings out of your bullpen. Now your bullpen's ruined for the rest of the series. And maybe you got to send someone down that you don't want to send down because you got to get a different arm back to get some life in your bullpen.
Right.
And if you had a long reliever who could go even 3 innings, you know, that can really save your bullpen and make the difference of winning at least one game in a series.
Right. Well, that's, you know, that's one of the things, like I said, I've been the most amazed about with Pittsburgh. You know, they start out with Genmar Gomez, who could throw those innings, and Justin Wilson. And the other day, Vin Mazzaro came in, who, you know, he's thrown a couple innings for you. Again, one of those guys who was a starting pitcher, converted into a relief pitcher for whatever reason, whether it's just his, you know, inability to command and control his pitches, or whether it's because, you know, he just doesn't have the stuff to be a starter to make it through a lineup that many times. But for him to go through and pitch 2 or 3 innings like that, it seems like it would make sense for a team to have a guy like that on their roster, the way that baseball's played today.
I agree, and I think they wanted Scott Barnes to be that guy. They gave him that chance a couple times. But see, I think it was that Rays game that lasted till 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
They put him out there, and that's the time when you're going to use that guy. You know, Kluber pitched 2 innings, then there was like 4 different rain delays, and now it's 2 in the morning. You're like, okay, game's going to start. Now that's when the long man gets the call. I don't think he lasted an inning.
He threw an inning. He gave up 5 earned runs.
Yeah.
2 home
runs.
See,
he had already been underperforming against lefties. So they're like, okay, well, if you can at least do this for us, you know, our other lefties are so bad anyways, we'll keep you around. He couldn't even give him any innings. They blew through their bullpen and got killed that game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. Like, at least go out there. And if you give up runs, you give up runs. You know, you're kind of the old mop up, you know,
right,
you're just taking your licks, and the manager's going to say like, yep, keep throwing, buddy. I'm going to leave you out there. But when it gets so bad that the manager's like, okay, I've seen enough. That's enough.
We're waving the white flag. We're done.
I mean, so I think that they were hoping Scott Barnes could be that guy, but.
Well, I'd like to make an official push for every team to designate a long reliever now.
I'd be interested to know if the Astros have long relievers in their bullpens, because that seems like a team that would just really...
weren't the Astros talking about having, like, every guy throw 3 innings or something ridiculous like
they
that?
They tried to do that.
Oh, good Lord. What a disaster.
It's like a 6-man rotation, and then, like, every man in the bullpen stretched out to 80 pitches or something.
Everybody's throwing three. Here we go.
I don't know.
Jeez.
You could send him Zagurski.
Yeah,
fit right in.
Good old Mike Zagurski. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today. We'd like to again thank our listeners. If you're listening to us on iTunes, go ahead and give us that rate and review. Help us drive our popularity up. We'd like to thank Dr. Garrett Britton for coming back today, along with Jason Ruggiero. If you want to check us out on the internet, you can check us out at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter @tristatebb. And check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Dr. Garrett and Jason, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you next week. Here is more than feel that you wish you'd made it a free choice. It doesn't matter.